Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Listeners of Sons of Patriarchy, Peter Bell here, producer of the podcast. Just so you know, we are turning ads on for this series, and the reason is simple. We need to cover our costs. It takes a lot of money to run this, as everything has been self-funded up to this point. We ran this past the Sons of Patriarchy team, as well as the Survivor community, and we have received the green light to act on this decision. These ads will not be intrusive, nor will they be random. They will occur at the beginning and end of each episode. There will be no interruptions during the content of each. With this decision, we are earmarking 25% of the revenue these ads generate towards outreach, which exclusively provides resources for survivors of the movements we are exposing and profiling. The rest will go to cover our costs and our time in producing this series. If you would like to donate directly to our efforts, find the outreach link in the show notes. There you can give a single or recurring donation. Along with this, we are turning on Apple subscriptions. $4.99 per month will give you access to ad-free listening. You can also sign up for the same on our Patreon account, link in the show notes. Now, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to Sons of Patriarchy. Before we dive into today's episode, we want to take a moment to provide a content warning. In this episode, we'll be discussing sensitive topics, including emotional, spiritual, and sexual abuse. We understand that these subjects can be triggering for many listeners. If you find yourself feeling uncomfortable or need to take a break, please feel free to pause or skip to a later segment. Your well-being is our top priority. We encourage you to reach out for support if you need it. There are resources available to help you through difficult times, and those can be found in our show notes, and intake forms to private support communities, which are screened. Thank you for being here with us today. Welcome to Groomed to Submit, Abuse in the CREC, Part 2. In today's episode, we share the stories of Emily Dye. Came out publicly about the abuse she suffered in 2020 as a Logos student in the mid-2010s. As in the case every Thursday, there will be no music or sound mixing throughout this episode. We want these stories to speak loud and clear. So we move to Emily Dye, a former student at Logos School in Moscow, Idaho. Though she and her parents were never members at Christ Church Moscow, her abuser was. Let's get to know Emily.
Yeah, my name is Emily Page Dye, and I'm originally from Pomeroy, Washington, which is a little tiny town outside of the Lewiston-Clarkston Valley. So it's a bit of a trek from Moscow. And my family found out about Wilson primarily through his school. We were looking for another private Christian school because I had gone to a school in the valley up until eighth grade, but that's as far as they went. And so my parents wanted something for my high school education and found Logos. And that's how we kind of got plugged into the Moscow community.
Gotcha. Do you know how your parents found out about Wilson? Because you were like, were they aware of his influence before this? Or like, oh, cool, just another Christian school that we'll send Emily to.
Yeah, I don't think they would have known Wilson through any of his other work. It was primarily through the school. They really were into the idea of a Christian education. My mom started researching him, read Dorothy Sayers' book on classical Christian education, and really liked the idea of Logos and liked the idea of, that classical Christian education, that the quadrivium and all of that.
This story contains continuities that are shared all across the stories of abuse you will hear throughout this series. Whether it's education, an insular community, or joining arms in the culture wars, families are hooked and then hoodwinked. Emily met her abuser at Logos School, a school you'll hear more about throughout this series. How did this come about? I asked her.
Yeah. So It would have been my junior year that I started studying in one of the male teachers' classrooms. And it was just because I had a free period. And so I would just stay in his classroom because it was my last class of the day and wait for my sisters to finish their last class of the day so we could all go home together. And I would just finish my homework and did this for many months. And he was sitting there grading papers and doing his thing. And sometimes there were other students who would also stay in the classroom and study. And over the course of that time, he started to, I guess the term would be groom me. And I was very much set up for this to some extent. This kind of culture was at Logos, and it wasn't just him that behaved this way. Tom Garfield also operated in a very similar way, where he would come up behind the girls at lunch and like rub their shoulders and would be very affectionate with certain girls. And you kind of knew who his favorites were. And I'd been used to it, like to some extent. Like I just kind of thought this was the way that older men authorities operated, is that they would touch you, that they were physically affectionate with the girls. That was a very normal thing. So Nance started operating the same kind of way, where he was very physically affectionate. He would just touch me, he would touch my hand, touch my back, touch my shoulder, that kind of thing. And I saw him as he was an elder at the church. He was super well respected. And yeah, I saw him as a mentor and as someone I could look up to. He was my teacher, and particularly as a spiritual mentor. So I asked him lots of questions about God and all of that. And he was my church doctrine teacher as well during that junior year, church doctrine and rhetoric. So had lots of conversations with him about that. Kind of was like, oh, I'm teacher's pet, I'm a favorite student. But wasn't really aware of what was going on. And then from there, things began to escalate.
So when did you start? I mean, I think the narrative has been it was like you enjoyed it and you didn't know anything was happening and it was consensual, even though Jim Nance is older than you, a teacher, you're underage. Did any of this, did it register with you? Or like you said, it was just that's just culture here. That's what everybody does, which is so weird. Because they separated the sexes so often, male and female, but then the male teachers would come around and sort of groom the female students.
I mean, I basically saw it as the culture. I didn't think it was weird. I thought it was normal. which is totally messed up. I had no way of really telling. It wasn't until he actually grabbed my ass that I was like, oh, and the red flag started to go off, where I started to become concerned. And I believe that would have been early in the year in what year would that have been? 2014, early in 2014, because it's still cold out. I do remember that. And yeah, he got more handsy than normal, and he'd been hugging me. The hugs went on for longer and longer, and I was a little bit uncomfortable, but I just kind of put up with it. I was like, okay. And because I saw him as such an authority, it was a bit of he couldn't do any wrong. Like he was the moral standard, as were a lot of the men in that community. Like Wilson would be moral standard, and we looked up to them so much that yeah, they could do anything, and then you adapted your own worldview to match the behavior of the authoritative, the man in authority. And that submission doctrine was very much part of that as well. If Nance told me to do something, I did it, because he was my teacher, because he was male, for a lot of reasons. There wasn't, didn't push back against anything. I guess I also knew it was a little bit weird that he texted me constantly, but I justified it in my head. I was like, oh yeah, no, it's just like this mentorship relationship. We're just friends. And so I didn't see it as, yeah, I justified it in my head as not being weird, the fact that my teacher was texting me constantly. And that again happened, that started in 2014 or 2013, probably when I was 17.
Yeah, so underscore, you were underage, you're a minor, so
Was barely
regardless,
17
yeah.
when I started my junior year, I just turned 17. And that's when I started classroom and all of that happened. I was underage. And that's often pushed is that I was over 18, it was consensual. I was tempting him, or I was, because that was the kind of the message that Nance had put in, is he was flattered by my attentions. And that is what, my parents were told. That's what everyone said is, oh, Nance was just flattered by your attentions. He just, she developed a crush on him, and he was tempted by her. That same sort of, it was my fault. I started it. I was the one that was flirting with him. Which I'm like, it's a little bit bizarre. I was like, why would you think, like, he's like this 53-year-old.
Oh, he's 53. For some reason, I thought he was in his 20s.
No, 53. His kids were older than me. He had grandkids, I think. I'm not sure if he's had his first grandkid at this point or not. But that happened over the course of the time I was, all of this was happening. He had grandkids.
With Emily introduced to Jim Nance, we move on to what really happened. As you'll hear, Jim was in his 50s when he became obsessed with then-teenaged Emily. He's married with kids and then approaches her. Here's Emily with a full story.
No, absolutely not. It was very much pushed, the onus was pushed on me. And he kind of emphasized that as well. He was like, you're going to get me in trouble. You're going to cause issues with my marriage. That was a narrative that he pushed. And so when Wilson and the church basically said the same things, it didn't strike me. Again, it didn't strike me as weird because that's what Nance had been pushing down my throat the entire time. And the purity culture thing was used as a means of shaming me. One thing that Nancy Wilson said to me in therapy late many years later was, oh, you need to clean out your closet. Because you wear slutty clothes, essentially. This has happened. I was like, I was wearing a school uniform. And you can check my school record. I didn't have that many uniform violations. So things escalated with Nance pretty rapidly. I think you asked the question of when did I really realize something was up. I'd say the first thing that came across my radar was when he touched my ass. And I went and I remember just standing and staring into my locker for an indeterminate amount of time, not really sure what to do about the situation and just deciding to do nothing because I had no idea what to do, how to respond, if I should tell someone, if I should confront him. I didn't know what to do, so I just did nothing, and I was panicked, and I felt that somehow I must have encouraged him or given the indication somehow, some mysterious womanly wiles that was something that I was wanted or was okay with. So that would have been the first point that it kind of came across my radar. And then I just ignored it. I was like, it didn't happen. Like in my head, I was like, yeah, not full denial. Just ignore that it ever happened and pretend it didn't and move on with my life as if nothing, like if it was all normal. The second time, the next time I really started, because at that point I just convinced myself again that it was a platonic, normal relationship between a teacher and a student. And he was just overly affectionate with me because he saw me as like a daughter, or he was looking out for me, and as my mentor, that kind of thing, as my spiritual mentor. It's like a pastoral kind of role. And so I then again convinced myself that it was okay. That changed at the beginning of my senior year when we went on the physics trip, and he was at this point now my physics and calculus teacher. And going on to that trip, there was, I mean, weird things. He selected all my outfits for the trip before we went on the trip.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, like, and at this point, he'd been like requesting photos too. So the fact that I like fully convinced myself this was normal was like a little bit batshit, but like, denial, I guess, is pretty powerful. So yeah, he'd selected my outfits. We went on this trip. He would like have me sit in the front seat and like navigate for him. And I was just like, oh yeah, it's because I'm a favorite. Like, naively going with it. And then at some point during the trip, he told me that I needed to like stay away from him, that I was giving people the wrong idea. And that freaked me out. And so I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, I'm presenting. He's like, I know you're not doing anything wrong, but like you're giving the appearance of evil, essentially. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I'll give space. So I tried to, but again, he would like always just drag me off alone places. And I was trying to avoid it. And I was super conflicted, didn't know what was the right thing to do, felt panicky about the whole thing. And yeah, he'd do things like he'd play footsie with me under the table, or like touch my leg under the table, that kind of thing, like feeling up my thigh. And obviously, one of the other mothers on the trip witnessed what was going on, and she was also working at the school. And so she complained to the school. She brought it to their awareness that this was an issue. And this would have been September 2014 that the school was first made aware formally that there was an issue. And they responded by speaking to Nance and didn't speak to me, didn't speak to my parents, just spoke to Nance. The only reason I knew this happened was because Nance approached me and told me that it happened and basically said that I had, again, given the appearance of evil. He was like, oh yeah, I know it's all innocent. You know it's all innocent, but like, you need to be better because you're messing with my reputation and you're going to get me in trouble, was kind of the messaging. And he would have said it would have been more subtle in the way he'd said it and more nuanced, but that was very much what he pushed on me. And I was like, oh yeah, cool, I'll keep my distance. And he was like, no, like, now we just have to be more secretive about it. And at that point, that was the point where things escalated very rapidly after that. And there had already been issues before that, where I was in the school play and he would like have me go off places alone with him. And I have a hard time remembering exactly the timeline on everything, like his dates. But yeah, after that, things went very rapidly. And he would take me, he would have me meet him places. He'd have me meet him at the Arboretum at the University of Idaho. That was one of the favorite locations that he'd have me meet him, like random parking lots in the back of his truck. And yeah, and he would molest me. And yeah, that happened, that started to happen a lot. And I was ashamed. I felt like I was the one that had caused it, that I was to blame. I didn't know how to tell anyone. I thought I would get expelled. I thought I would ruin his marriage. There was, and he very much pushed these things on me, and gave me that responsibility. The one incident that I remember probably the most clearly was, he had me come to his classroom, and it was a Saturday. It was up in Moscow for some reason. And he had me come into his classroom. And so nobody else was at the school. It was just us. And yeah, he took off my clothes and or took off my shirt and put his hand in my pants. And yeah, you get it. And afterwards, he like went off to the bathroom, was gone for a bit. I was super shaken. I was like trying to get my clothes back on, but like my hands were shaking so badly. Like I couldn't get my bra on. I couldn't get my, like I was struggling. Finally managed to get myself like redressed. And he came back in and sat me down at the desk and lectured me and was like, "Don't you want to be pure for your husband?" And I'm sobbing. I was like already like shaking and like crying and choking, like because it was awful. And yeah, he lectured me about my purity. And afterwards, I was like crying, and he gave me a hug and comforted me and forgave me and
Forgave you.
forgave me. And I like begged for his forgiveness. I just apologized and apologized for it. And like I still like I can remember the location. I can remember being backed into the bookcase. And I still actually remember the clothes I was wearing. Anyhow, it would have been shortly after that. He was still texting me constantly, still meeting up with me, but like I believe that would have been winter. I remember it was snowy. My mom saw a message on my phone that he had messaged me, and it wasn't a sexual message, but it was a very familiar message. And that raised alarm bells for her. She was concerned and approached me about it and said, what it like basically she wrote me a letter and was like, don't need to talk to him like this. Like please, like cut off communication. This is inappropriate. And I immediately told him that that was what but my mom had seen his messages. And so he panicked and went to Tom Garfield and told him that he'd been inappropriately texting me. So this is the second time the school has been notified that something's gone wrong. And so he's now confessed.
Oh, so
And
he's good. He's scot-free now. He's good.
he's got free. Yeah, he's confessed. He's repented.
Good. Great.
And so Garfield pulled me, like, pulled my. Had my parents and him meet in his office, and he asked me if Nance had ever kissed me. And Nance had not kissed me. Obviously, he'd done everything else. but he had not kissed me. And
Well,
I
good. I'm
assume,
glad he didn't kiss you.
yeah. And I assume what had happened was he'd spoken to Garfield because I didn't even kiss her.
He's like, oh, good. Not kissing. That means nothing else happened.
So asked that question, and then I asked, like, am I gonna get expelled? And he said no. And that was the extent of the interview. Like, he didn't ask, and I was ready to confess. I hadn't told anyone about this. I just was so desperate to tell someone. It was hard because like my parents were in the room. I was terrified, and I thought I was going to be expelled.
Yeah, that was probably number one on your mind. Like, I don't want this to ruin me. I don't want this to ruin him. And the moment that you were quote unquote let go or absolved, you're like, oh, thank God. Even though you're probably still like, but I need to tell somebody about what happened.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I was panicked, and that was exactly it. And I was also ashamed. Like, I was ashamed of like telling my parents I'd been holding the secret from them. I also felt that I had let them down. They've sacrificed so much for me to go to this school and to be here and to get this education. And I've worked so hard. I've been working very hard to get good grades. And if I get expelled now, then like I was seeing this as it's my senior year. Like, this is the end. Like, I'm not going to get into university. I've let my parents down. I was a wreck. And So the school then decided, or he decided, I think he decided to resign. So he sent in his resignation, obviously under pressure from the school to do so. Oh, this is after, I forgot to mention, my parents had a meeting with Wilson.
Good old
While this was
Wilson.
all, oh, Wilson comes in to clean up the mess. He's the mop-up crew. My parents had a meeting with Wilson. Wilson assured them that everything was fine, that he had addressed the situation, that he'd spoken to Nance, that nothing illegal had occurred.
Oh, good.
All good, yeah, because he'd spoken to Nance.
You guys hadn't kissed, and nothing illegal had occurred.
Illegal had occurred. We hadn't kissed, guys. Yeah. So that was I was in the auditorium, so I wasn't in on that meeting. I wasn't a part of that. Wilson also let them know that they were planning on, like, that Nance would be resigning and that they would be finding new teachers and substitutes and everything for the next half of the senior year. So my parents then conveyed that to me. I was like sitting in the auditorium. Wilson walks right by me. I'm like sitting there, like studying, being like looking up at him just like pretending I wasn't there. Like, I'm just a problem. And yeah, that winter break. So we then went into the winter break. I finished up my finals with Nance.
Oh, good. You're
So
still with him. Yeah.
yeah. Oh, he still took his classes
Yeah,
after this
I'm
until the
glad they
end.
still had him there.
Took my finals. That was awkward. Like, I remember having to go up, and there was an issue with one of my finals, like an issue in one of the questions. Like, there was a mistake with the grading or something, and I had to like go up and confront him about it. I've never told anyone about this, but it was like while this was all happening, after the meeting with Garfield and before the meeting with my with Wilson, and I had to like go speak to him about my grade. And let, get it corrected because he'd made an error on my calculus exam or something. And he fixed it for me, but it was just like this awful. He was still my teacher and I still had to interact with him. Like that had not changed. He then resigned after all of this. And yeah, and they sent out a letter to all of the parents. Saying that Nance was stepping down and to not ask any questions, but to wish him well and for him and his family. And it was a very fluffy and like, thank you for his like long service to the school kind
They
of
didn't
letter.
reference at all, like, this dude's a pedophile?
No, that wasn't mentioned.
Or
That was definitely.
even like a general, like, he did some inappropriate stuff, even that.
No, that was not mentioned. It was very like, and people knew because like gossip, like the school people gossiped, and there was a lot of people that kind of knew what it was about or had an idea. Like it was obvious. Like if one of the parents on the tr school trip can see it happening, then it wasn't like a massive secret. And the students, like my fellow classmates, kind of knew that it was about me and that something had happened, but they were told not to ask any questions about it. Oh, and the other thing that was quite relevant in that meeting with Garfield, Garfield told me, if anyone asks about this, you're to lie. He said, don't tell anyone. If anyone says anything, if any of your classmates ask, just tell them it didn't have anything to do with you. You don't know anything that's going on. And he just like coached me through, I'm supposed to lie about it. And not tell a soul. Yeah. which is ironic because the school then later, like I've later been accused and Wilson's accused me of covering it up. Like this is, I basically did what I was told. And It's like he's accusing me of basically what was their crime? What was the school's crime of covering it up? He's trying to put that on me in kind of the same way that Nance put the abuse on me. Where was I in the story? That finished winter break. Winter break was awful. I became pretty anorexic and suicidal. And went back to class and was very skinny. No one ever spoke to me. And I, like, the students knew, and like, it was obviously the gossip that something had happened. This is a new
A small
change. There's
school, it's kind of easy to figure out who this happened to.
Exactly. So I mostly hung out with the younger kids that last semester. My classmates didn't really know how to approach it, which fair, they're teenagers. Like, I wouldn't expect teenagers to know how to deal with something like this.
Especially their purity culture teenagers who this is pounded into them, shoved down their throat. How on earth would they react to abuse?
So I kind of distanced myself. And I was hoping, like, I was like always waiting for someone to come speak to me. I was, well, like, is Garfield gonna come talk to me? He's told me to lie about this to anyone if they ask, but like, is he gonna ever act, like, talk to me about it? Or like, am I ever gonna have an opportunity to share what's gone on? Or is one of the female teachers gonna approach me? Will, and no one ever did. It was moved on with life, pretend nothing happened. I remember, like, breaking down in the classroom and crying. We're having, like, I was breaking down in class. Like, it was pretty obvious that I wasn't handling, that I wasn't coping particularly well.
Yeah,
But
I don't blame you. Not at all.
yeah, no one spoke to me. I got into university. I accepted. Got to university, was super excited about that, and kind of saw it as my out. I picked a university that was super far away and sent in my acceptance. I went to George Washington, so I was like, perfect, I'm getting out of here. I am leaving these people behind. I'm starting my life over. I'm leaving Idaho. Was very excited about that. And I was like, I finally, by the end of that semester, I was like, I'm gonna be okay. Like, I've got a plan. I've got a job lined up. And all through this, actually, like, Wilson was my teacher for this as
Oh,
well.
gosh.
Like, I was in class with Wilson in the mornings each morning. Like, he had every opportunity to pull me aside and do the pastoral thing and say, like, say something.
Yeah.
Ask me. He had every opportunity to ask me. I was in his class every morning. He had the opportunity to ask me. Nobody asked me the question, and I was desperate to tell someone. But I was told not to tell my friends. I couldn't tell my friends, and
And
none of
told
the
a lie
abuse.
by Tom Garfield. So who are you supposed to tell and how are you supposed to tell?
Yeah, exactly. That school year ended, and it was my graduation ceremony. And I was at my graduation on the stage, and I looked out into the crowd, and Nance was there. He had come to my graduation. And there was then, like, the after party after the graduation, and Nance was sitting at the table with Garfield. Oh, I also forgot to mention, all through this, Nance was still on campus. He was still at the school every day. Because he went on walks with Tom Garfield at lunch every day. So I saw him every single day this entire semester. Like, he was still there. Like, he was still at the school grounds all the time, just wasn't teaching. And I didn't interact with him through this time. He would just go and, like, go for walks with Garfield. I would see him, whatever. He then showed up at my graduation. He then showed up at the after party at my graduation. He was sitting at a table with Garfield, and Garfield called me over. And I sat down at the table with him and Nance. and just had a chat. I asked him like what he was doing, and he's like, oh, he's gotten another teaching job. Like,
Good.
cool,
Great.
relieved. Yeah, I was like, at least I'm not like he's not jobless and he's not gonna lose his house
Yeah,
or
find another
everything.
girl to be a pedophile with.
Oh, and that's exactly what happened.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he then got in trouble at that job for inappropriate behavior with
Shocking.
shockingly. And I know about this because Nance told me. So that basically restarted everything. So I hadn't spoken to anyone, and I was so desperate to talk to someone. The only person I could talk to about what had happened, because he was complicit, was Nance.
Oh my gosh.
And so it essentially restarted where it had left off. And so, like, through that next summer, over the course of that summer before I went to university, he would ask me to come meet him. I would meet him. Things would happen. He then did kiss me.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad he didn't kiss you up until that point.
Up until that point, I'm still 18. And yeah, so that happened. I went to university. I chose not to come home for Thanksgiving because I didn't want to be home and to see him. I couldn't come up with a decent excuse not to come home for Christmas. I was also super homesick and missed my family and all that, as one does their first year of university.
Yeah, of course.
So I came home for Christmas, saw him at Christmas, assaulted me at Christmas. I then went back to school. I'm a wreck. This is now 2016. So back at university, he's still talking to me, and it's this on and off cycle of like the shaming and demanding, yeah, I repent for my sins and feeling responsible and just feeling very trapped in the whole thing. I decided not to come home for the summer, for the same reason. I didn't want to be around him. So ended up getting an internship in DC and stayed in Washington, DC through that entire period. And it was over that time that I was in Washington, DC, and I had a friend from high school that came and visited me. And I was like there with my housemate and my friend, and we were bantering back and forth. And like we had never spoken about anything that had happened. Just bantering, and we're like, oh, you did this. Remember when you did that? And she goes, well, at least I didn't get a teacher fired.
Oh, frick. Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I don't want to talk about that. And I just shut it down immediately. And my housemate is like, what? You got someone fired? She's thinking it's a joke, like it's something funny that's happened because we're having like funny banter about like stupid things you did in high school. And she's like, what? You got someone fired? Like, do tell. And I was like, no, we're not talking about it. I
Ah.
then later approached her and said yes. And she was the first person that I really told the story to. I didn't tell her. And the thing that got me was she didn't immediately reject me. She was still my friend. She didn't, like, I was expecting that when I told someone, and that was like, that was it. They'd be like, you're ostracized. And I felt very ostracized when I was at Logos after everything had happened and while everything was happening. Like, I didn't have it. I felt, yeah, I was outside the community. I was persona non grata. And I expected that to be the response. I was expected rejection. And she was just like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And she still loved me and she was still my friend. And that changed everything for me. That was the thing that kind of, I finally was able to tell someone and they responded with love and they didn't blame me and they didn't reject me. And so I didn't tell her that I was still speaking to Nance, that I kept. My parents bought me a plane ticket to come home for my birthday as a surprise. So I came home for my birthday at the end of August. I can't saw you. Like I couldn't not see it. It was like this. I didn't. It's like if he told me to come see him, I did. I obeyed. At this point, it was just so ingrained. And I've been, and this is a lot of what Wilson and the community is like. Well, she willingly came, and she willingly, like, she would go and see him. He would
You
tell her to
were
come see him.
freaking groomed. That's what happened.
Yeah. And it was like, it wasn't like it didn't even occur to me it was an option not to come see him almost. Yeah. So I saw him, same thing. And then he was coming to that. So I went back to school, get moved into the dorm. I then told Jess, my housemate, that I was still in contact with him. And I told her this because he had planned, he was coming up on a work trip to Alexandria, which is the city next to DC. And he wanted me to come see him in Alexandria. And I didn't want to. I really didn't want to. I knew that if I went and saw him, he would rape me. And I was desperate for that not to happen ever again. So I told Jess that I was still speaking to him and asked for her help. And she helped me to disconnect from him and to get him out of my life and to block him. And she helped me write the messages to him saying, "Don't contact me ever again." And walked me through all of that. And so then the weekend he came to Alexandria, I went to New York because he'd been tracking my phone. Like he tracked my phone through all of this. Like I don't remember when he started, but so he knew all of my locations. He knew where my classes were. He knew where my friends lived. He knew my
You just
routines.
became a straight up stalker.
Yeah. And he fully stalked me for quite some time. Like I don't remember when it started, but probably started in high school. And so like he would call me out if I did something outside of my routine. Like if I was in a different location, he's like, "Why are you not at your dorm right now?" I'm like, "I'm at the library studying. Like I've got a test coming up tomorrow." But like, he would always know. Or if I went to a bar, like underage drinking as Linda is, or a party, if he could tell that I was like at a fraternity, he would like call me up on it and get very angry. I remember one time I was just sitting in like the watching a soccer game with this guy that I'd met on the bus, and we'd had a good chat. I'd ran into him again, and we ended up going and sitting at the soccer game, had a great time. It was a lovely sunny autumn day, and it was outside of my normal behavior. And he's like, "What were you doing? Why were you sitting here?" And I was like, "I was like at a soccer game with a friend." And he's like, "Who's this friend?" And was just furious that I would speak to a man that I would have a friendship with a man that I would go outside my normal routine. So he was very much super, super controlling. And like when I was obviously like I couldn't just sneak home. Like if I was home, he would know where I was.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. And so like when he came to Alexandria, I was terrified that he would come and find me. So I went to New York and it was like I'm out of the city. So I was out of the city for that entire week. I just like escaped class. I'm gone. I'm sick, guys. And yeah, he kept trying to contact me. He would try to contact me through different means. He would create email addresses and reach out to me. He would reach out to me on LinkedIn. I like every time I blocked him, he would find a new way of contacting me. Until that Christmas, I came home for Christmas and at that point, it all came out. I was at the school and ran into Tom Garfield, and he's like, "Oh, let's catch up, like old alumni at the school." So like went over, hung, like had a chat with him in his office, whatever. How's DC? How's college going? Et cetera, et cetera. And he said, it's a good thing we caught that, like everything that happened with Nance, that could have been really bad." I was like, excuse me. I was like, it was really bad. And he's like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "No, like this, it was bad. Like everything happened." And I just told him at that point. And he wanted to know all of the little details. Like he would ask me, like he was particularly interested in the details of the sexual acts that had occurred and whether I liked it or not.
Whether you liked it or not.
Yeah, he like wanted me to tell him about Nance going down on me and to tell him whether I liked it and how it felt. And I was like, "No, actually, no, I didn't."
Nor is that a question you should be asking me.
Nor is that relevant. I don't understand. Yeah, but yeah, he asked whether I liked it. That was the thing that he really wanted to know. Obviously, he then spoke to Nance, and that shortly thereafter, Nance again confessed. Massive air quotes. And basically, he confessed what I had told Garfield. Like that was basically what was then shared to Wilson. And at this point, I'm trying to remember who told. I believe Garfield told Stevenson, who was the new superintendent at the school. And Stevenson was like, "We need to," like, he'd also seen the records and he's like, "We need to report this to police and really push for it to be reported to police." And so Stevenson then reported to police what had occurred. And police were like, "Well, we need to talk to the other people that were involved, that were part of the interviews." And Stevenson said, like, "I really would like Wilson to also speak with you. Wilson doesn't want to," basically. But Wilson then came and spoke to police. But Wilson presents it as if he took initiative, and as soon as he found out, he immediately went to police. That's not what happened. What happened was Stevenson went to police, and he was pretty much forced to at that point, like he had to. And I was police then contacted me, and the way the police dealt with this honestly is odd. They called me, I responded to the phone call, I was driving. I denied everything pretty much. I was like, "I don't want to talk about this, I don't want it to happen." Like, I was panicked that my parents would find out, I thought I was in trouble. I was like, not fine, nothing happened, denied it all. And I then promptly crashed the car.
Yes.
Just drove it right into a ditch. My dad was like, "How did you even do that?" And I was like, "I don't know." Just drove it straight off the road. I was suicidal. I was a wreck. I attempted that night after the call with the police. And shortly thereafter, Nancy Wilson contacted me, and she was like, offered counseling services. And I was like, finally, finally, someone in the community is actually wants to talk to me. The first time ever, someone is actually taking an interest. And that's where I had the counseling sessions with Nancy, and those were horrendously awful. That was where she told me that I needed to clean out my closet. She told me that I needed to be more pure.
So
She
she
told me
blamed this all on you.
yes. She told me, her exact quote was that the only victim here was Nance's wife. She made it very clear that she saw me as the other woman. And was like, you need to be more devout. And gave me books to read so that I could improve my faith journey. She told me I needed to be to stay away from men at university, that all of the things. And during this time, this is when Nan, not Nance, Wilson started writing that blog, Letters to a Broken Girl. So those came out of my counseling sessions with Nancy. So I would have a counseling session with Nancy, and then Wilson would write a blog about it, and then Nancy would send it to me.
She'd send, what the heck?
Yeah, just like this weird correspondence with Wilson through this blog thing. And she's like, oh, it wasn't about you, it wasn't specific. I was like, it was like conversations I would have in counseling, and then he would then write about it in the blog. And it was like this very weird, such a weird dynamic. And obviously he changed the names, changed the details, changed the situation ever so slightly.
And this
Person
is
was an
after everything about Nance came out, all the stuff came out, and then Nancy reaches out to you, and then Doug's like, I'm gonna write about this.
Correct.
Okay.
And like even my friend, the my housemate Jess, she was like, is this blog about you? Was like, yeah, you know me well enough to know it is. And so that happened. She also was, they demanded that I tell my parents, or else they would tell my parents, was the threat. And I didn't want to tell my parents. I didn't want them to know. I just kind of, I was so ashamed of everything that happened. So I wrote a letter, and I wasn't ready to talk to my parents about it all. Like I wasn't ready. And I wrote a letter with Nancy's help to my family to tell them what had happened. And I, Nancy helped me edit the letter, helped me write the letter. Before I'd sent it, the letter had gotten out, essentially, and had gotten shared. And the details have gotten shared. And I found this out through one of the wives of another of the elders, the Lloyds, Alex Lloyd. So
Oh,
Alex Lloyd had
good. Yeah, I know about Alex Lloyd. Yep.
Yes, the one that's in jail.
Yep.
That one. and so Heather had seen the letter, and so then it had she then mentioned it to me. And like it had all come around that this letter had now been seen in multiple, like the letter had gone out. Without my consent, my parents had not seen it. Wilson had obviously read it. The elders had read it. Like the thing had gone to all the places. And I then got on the plane back to university and sent the letter to my parents and cut off contact with them after sending it, because I wasn't ready to talk to them about it. And I was very much forced into it, and I was afraid that someone else would then tell them before I told them. And so I sent the letter and then just cut off contact, because I couldn't do it. I wasn't ready to talk to them. And I ended up talking to them later, but never really about this. We just never addressed it. And Nance then, at Wilson's direction, wrote an apology to my parents for what happened. Like a confession, an apology for sinning with me. And it was very much this idea, like this Old Testament idea, that I'm the property of my father, and I, like, my virginity is now sullied, and my purity is sullied, and he must apologize to my father for damaging said property. That was the way that felt, and it was, he very much presented it as we were sinning together, that this was Emily's choice as much as it was. And yeah, so he wrote that letter. I didn't see it until much later. And then it would have been about 2 years later that I finally came out publicly about everything. It's been 2 years. So that would have been early 2017 that the police report was made. Yeah. And then it would have been 2019. No, it would have been 2020 that I came out publicly. So 3 years later, I then wrote a post on Facebook and shared my story.
With all that said, Doug Wilson and the Christchurch Mafia responded to Emily's story of abuse that she was complicit and this relationship was consensual. Sure, Jim was infatuated with Emily, using Doug's own words, but as Emily grew older and it's the age of consent, she didn't mind it. I'll link Doug's blog in response to Emily in the show notes, assuming it doesn't get pulled down, but here's Emily's version of the story.
I didn't get any formal response from the church, no. They didn't approach me. My sister was approached by Heather Lloyd. Again, the Lloyds.
Yeah, we'll be talking about them. Yep.
And Heather complained about how selfish I was to post that. And that I hadn't consulted anyone in the church, and that I should have consulted people, and I should have talked to people before I came out publicly. And yeah, tried to get Krista, my little sister, to kind of like manage me, to crisis manage the situation. Told Krista not to talk to anyone about it. There was a lot of attempting to crisis manage, attempting to like shut it down. I did get some hate comments from people. That happens. There's this guy, Jason. He's such a weirdo. He like regularly just sends hate comments. It's like, ah, oh, joy. There he goes again. What's wrong with people? Yeah, it was, it definitely had a stir, but yeah, the church didn't reach out. I did have lots of people in the community. So this is when I met Sarah Bader, and this is where I kind of got looped into the group of people that had the group of survivors.
Yeah.
And connected with that group of people.
Gotcha. And I think you've already answered this, but just so I have it clear, like Christchurch accused you of lying, or somebody accused you of lying about something, and that was like made a big deal. What was that?
They accused me of covering it up, of covering up the whole thing, of being complicit in that. And so the reason that the school and the church have given why they didn't, why they didn't do anything was because I was hiding it and that I didn't tell anyone. They also found it weird, apparently weird. I attended church that before I had told Garfield about everything. Or I don't remember exactly. I think it was even before I had told Garfield. And Nance had like pinned me in a corner. And I was like trapped between the piano and the wall, and like wanted to talk to me because he was like still just would not leave me alone. This was in that period where he was trying to contact me through all these different means, etc. And I like managed to like make eyes at my sister and was like, help. And she managed, like, she came over and she was like, hi, we're going over here, and like pulled me out of the corner. It was like this awkward, like his body was physically blocking me and I couldn't get around, and I was like forced into this conversation. And they've taken that to mean like, oh, Emily had like a lovely little chat with Nance. Like, clearly she was on good terms. Clearly she wanted to talk to him. And it was, if I find that very, it was, yeah. So they very much pushed that it was consensual, that I guess I've lied about it not being consensual, even though it couldn't have been.
Seeing as this didn't occur under Christchurch's watch, nor was Emily a member of the church, nor was her family, why bring up this story in the midst of our exposure of the CREC? Well, that's because Jim Nance was and is a member of Christchurch Moscow, along with Doug Wilson's apparent knowledge of what might have been going on with Nance's grooming and abuse of Emily Dye. How much did everyone know? And what happened to Jim Nance?
Christchurch would definitely know. Wilson would absolutely know the extent of what has happened. He was deeply involved in all of the conversations that happened around it. He actually, and I didn't mention this earlier, he walked in on us. That's how I met Wilson. He walked in while Nance was grooming me. And Nance then shamed me for that and said, like, I was embarrassing him in front of his pastor. I was making him look bad, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, so he should have known better. And he probably, I'm assuming I'm not the only one. Like, this should have been, there were probably issues with Nance before this. Maybe I'm the first, but
Doubtful.
doubtful, seems unlikely. Yeah. There, he they should have been addressed so much earlier. Should have been addressed in 2014. It should have been addressed when the parent came forward and spoke to the school that she had concerns. My parent should have been brought in. I should have been brought in. The police should have been brought in September 2014 is when the police have been contacted. If there were any concerns about a teacher being inappropriate with a student, like you bring in the cops, like you get to the bottom of it.
That's just what you do. Yeah.
That's what you do. That's the appropriate. And then they're able to speak with the student and they have professionals. They're able to then get the actual information instead of having the student in a very cursory interview with her parents in the room and thinking she's going to get expelled. Like, that's not how you conduct that interview to get to the bottom of the situation. The police should have done that interview and they should have gotten to the bottom of the situation. And if they had, then Nance would likely be in jail. Even at that point. And that was before a lot of what had happened, like a lot of the worst of it had happened. And it would have saved me going through that. But that's not how they dealt with it. They talked to Nance and were like, slap on the wrist, don't do that, be
Yeah.
better.
Yep.
And he said,
Did you
I
kiss
don't
her?
know. Did you kiss her? Be more secretive about it. And so he was more secretive about it. Just be subtle. Just don't let anyone know. And one of the things that Nancy said in counseling that I thought was telling was way back when I was studying in his classroom. And like this would have been when I was 17, like I just turned 17, my beginning of my junior year, I'm studying in his classroom. She's like, oh yeah, my grandchildren thought that was very weird that you were studying in the classroom. And she was using it as a way of like, you're putting yourself in this risky situation with a male. You should know better. But she's like, yeah, we were concerned about that then. And I was like, if you had concerns or if you thought it was inappropriate that I was studying in this man's classroom after school, like say something then. Like, why are there red flags then? Like, why was there a concern at that point? It could have all been, it could have been all sorted out then and there. Like, before anything had happened. Like, it could have been prevented even.
When they filed the police reporter, when you filed it, whoever did it, did anything happen after that?
No, it didn't. The police then contacted me again in 2020 when I made the post. But at that point, so much time had gone by, they didn't feel like they had the evidence necessary to put together a case.
Gotcha.
I was also living in Australia, and it became much more complicated for police
Yeah.
to address it at that point than it was, would have been fresh when things had first occurred in 2014. Then you could have pulled the evidence, you could pull the text messages, you would have had the times, you would have had the timestamps for everything, you would have had the times, dates, locations of where assaults occurred. Now that's, like it's my memory isn't always going to be good on those details of when exactly, where exactly. And yeah, I no longer have those text messages. I've since lost that phone. Like, it makes it, it would have been much more difficult to prosecute. And this is something else that Wilson says pretty frequently is, oh, police determined that nothing illegal had occurred. That's not what police determined at all. Police determined that they weren't able to prosecute due to a lack of evidence, and so decided not to pursue the case. Those are very different things. It's not that he's innocent or that he didn't do anything wrong. It's he got away with it.
Now for some concluding thoughts and comments from Emily. What might she say to Doug Wilson if he were listening?
To Wilson, he once wrote an email to Nance, being like criticizing him and saying that he had like put other, he was risking other people's money. I want to know how much money, like how much money was, is my life worth? Like how much, what is the dollar price tag? Like where, what, I want to know what the dollar tag is that you were so worried that if you dealt with this well, and if you protected, like, what's my life worth, essentially? What do you see my life is worth? because, yeah. To Logos. Oh. I don't know. I spoke, one of the things, Heather Lloyd approached me and asked a similar question after everything had come out. She's like, how can we be better? Like, how can we make sure this has not happened again? We're putting windows in the doors of like the classroom doors. Sure. Like that'll fix it.
Yeah. It also didn't all happen inside the classroom. Happened everywhere else too.
Happened everywhere. It helped. It happened in the classroom. Happened in his car. It happened in the parking lot. Like it was, yeah. So yeah, that wouldn't do anything.
No.
I think that Logos, the school needs, it needs an entire revamp. Like it needs to be gutted and started over, essentially. You can't, it's the teachings as much as anything that caused this to happen. I don't think it's just a case. It is a case of Wilson and these teachings and the purity culture and the this submission doctrine that's really pushed by Wilson in the community. It's a case of them covering it up, but it's all, and protecting pedophiles, but it's also a case of them creating them to some extent. I think that not only is this a great place for someone like Nance to hide, but I do wonder if he hadn't been given all these tools, taught all these things, if he would have operated, maybe he would have, he probably would have, but there's others that may not have. I think there's a lot of men that have been essentially groomed in the opposite direction. They've been turned into predators by these teachings. They've been told that they have a right to a woman's body, that women are to submit to them, that marriage vows mean that their wife has vowed to have sex with them forevermore, and that she's consenting, like it's ongoing consent. And I think that's turning people that would not have otherwise been rapists, been predators, into predators. They've been, yeah, it's creating it. The purity culture creates it, and the submission culture creates it. The teachings about women create it. If you don't see women as being truly equal, seeing them as having a different role, and having them, seeing them having a lower role, lesser role, then you're going to treat them differently and with less respect and with less value. So I think that teaching children what they're teaching at Logos is incredibly damaging for both boys and girls. I think that girls leave Logos feeling like they have to, that they're culpable and they're responsible for the way men look at them. And that boys leave Logos thinking they're not responsible, and that that culpability and responsibility lies with women. And that if they act badly, then it's the woman's fault. Like they were tempted, and it's the stay away from me, Satan. It's Eve in the Garden of Eden. Like she's the temptress. And yeah. And so it takes away that responsibility for men, for boys to grow into men that act well. So that's what I would say about Logos. think the church community broadly needs to know what's going on with this and to read, to listen to Wilson instead of assuming that everything he says is right, because that's kind of the way the, you start with the premise that he's speaking truth. Start with the premise of what you know to be true and then hold him to that standard. Like with all of this, and it's like they just adapt their standard. They're like, well, Wilson's whatever Wilson's line is goes. And so, while I'm assuming the vast majority of people in that church would say that pedophilia is wrong and evil, they're willing to accept the excuses that Wilson gives for having protected pedophiles and created them and providing them this community. They should actually take what they know to be true and then judge Wilson by those standards and judge the community by those standards instead of the other way around, because they're adapting their own moral compass to match.
With those words to Doug and the price tag he thought Emily was worth, what might she say to Jim Nance, her abuser?
Oh, what would I tell Jim Nance? Go to hell. No, I don't. I wouldn't have anything to speak to Jim Nance. I don't have anything to say to him. No, I guess what I would say to him, if he thinks he's repented, if he thinks he's forgiven, he is not forgiven. He's not forgiven by me, and he's not forgiven by any other entity that he believes in. Like, he is not forgiven. That is not how that works, and that's not how repentance works. Repentance requires responsibility and taking responsibility for your actions. It doesn't mean getting away with them. If he was truly repentant, he would walk into a police station today and confess and say, "Yes, I sexually assaulted Emily." That's what he would say, and that's what he would do. That's repentance. What he's done now is just covering it up, and he's a despicable human being.
Now to her younger self, words she speaks that are as relevant to any girl who finds herself living through what Emily lived through.
I think first it would be just it's not your fault, and that people will still love you regardless, even if it's not these people, and that you should look for someone outside of the community. I that's incredibly hard. I don't really know. It's an impossible situation to some extent. If you're still in that community, if those are the people you know, if that's your family, speaking to someone may just get you blamed more, and cause its own trauma. So finding someone who is neutral, who doesn't have a vested interest, who is going to care for you and not for themselves and for their own reputations, they're going to put you first. I think that would be key. But I think mostly just know that it's not your fault. That would be the biggest one.
Lastly, for Emily's final thoughts, for those considering sending their kids to Lagos or any other school influenced by Wilson, what's her advice?
I mean, I guess that I've now come to a point where I can't be shamed by this, and I'm confident in who I am. I'm confident in my own actions, and I do not feel an ounce of guilt, and I do not feel think I had an ounce of culpability, and that I was a teenager,
Yeah,
and I know
I was about to say that.
I meet other teenagers. I like meet other 17-year-olds, and I'm like, wow, you're a child. You're very cute and sweet. And I was a very young 17. I was a very naive. Like I wasn't prepared. I didn't have a sex education. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the words. So I don't feel any responsibility. I have no guilt. I have no shame. And I'm not doing this because of bitterness. I think it's often pushed. It's like, oh, she's just bitter. She's angry atheist who's now left her faith and is trying to bring down the church or bring down good Christians. No, but I do think that people that are evil and who are causing harm and are causing suffering should be called out, and they should be held to account. And they should be held account in this life. They should be held account today and not, yeah, exactly. It needs to happen now. It does.
I mean,
Like, you're
I
you
can
are
say it,
probably.
not just in the life to come. Yeah, you don't have to
Yeah,
say it.
you
I'll say it.
have You're culpable here and now, and they may think they're going to heaven, but if they're right, then no, they're not, because any God that would send them to heaven. That you should be accountable to the people that you directly harm, not accountable outside of that. I think that's one of the things that I found incredibly frustrating and dehumanizing by all of this, is I was treated not as fully human to some extent. I felt like I was treated as an object by Nance, by Wilson, by the community. I was seen as a threat. I was seen as a crisis that needed to be managed. I was a PR problem. I was a financial risk. I was never seen as a human, and as a person that needed protecting, and that my life wasn't deemed valuable enough, not nearly as important as Wilson's empire and his image. And no end justifies that. I think there's a lot of people that say, oh, but he's spreading Christendom. Oh, like we're gonna support him. Anyway, because all he's getting the message out there. Like, even if
Fighting
I
the
don't,
libs. He's in the culture war. He's the
he's fighting that culture war. He's anti-woke. He's bringing Christian education to a lot of students. Like, no, even if you think those are good things, it doesn't justify the means. Like, he's not the warrior you want, and you should be really questioning whether, you're on the right side if you're siding with that kind of person.
As we conclude, if you have a story like Emily's, please know you're not alone. Know we care about you, and many others do as well. Reach out to us. Find out how to do so in our show notes, but do so safely, especially if you're still in an environment like the movement we're profiling. There really is help out there for you, and we'll help you find it. Next week, in part three, we continue pro. Next week, in part three, we continue profiling stories of abuse in the Series C. See you then. Sons of Patriarchy is brought to you by the administrators of Examining Doug Wilson in Moscow in partnership with Peter Bell. It's written, produced, and edited by Peter Bell. Original music, sound design, and mixing by Aaron Feeney. This series wouldn't be possible without the dozens of abuse survivors whose bravery and vulnerability make it what it is. Every episode was sent to them before being published, and their feedback, edits, encouragement, and eventual approval make this what it is. May your voices be heard far and wide. Thank you.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Countertops are the centerpiece of the home, with stylish options for every lifestyle and durability that will last for years to come. Transform everyday spaces into gathering places with custom-crafted countertops from Menards. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go on Menards.com and get a free design estimate today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for many other great deals happening this week.
Four seasons greetings to you all from Menards.